Tonight, we're going through the resurrection appearances. So after Jesus has been buried, he has been raised, and then the instances where he's appearing to various followers of his. And this being the first of those, I get to actually cover, I guess, the resurrection itself, largely. And before we get into it, what is, or the resurrection of Jesus is critical to our faith as Christians. Why?
Because it confirms everything prior to that Jesus taught and did. It confirmed the prophecy from the Old Testament that you would, David said, that he would not lead his soul in corruption or to see corruption. All of the things that Jesus said leading up to his death and thereafter were confirmed by his resurrection.
Yes. So Jesus, in his resurrection, confirmed his teaching and his prophecies, as well as the prophecies of the Old Testament before, were all confirmed when he was resurrected. What else can we say about it? About why it is critical to our faith?
If he hadn't raised from the dead, we would have no hope of resurrection. And what would be the point in our religion?
Exactly. Yeah, in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul clearly lays out that essentially it's the linchpin to the entire Christian faith. Because if we don't have that, as Earl said, we have no hope. And if I recall correctly, the way Paul worded it was, we're of all men most to be pitied. And why would that be? What would be so piteous or pitiable about Christians if
we couldn't get rid of our sins?
Okay. Definitely a very strong point. We could not get rid of our sins.
We'll be believing a lie.
Yeah, we'll be believing a lie. Also, just think about how much we have to change our lives to be Christians. And how much or how often Christians end up suffering for Christ and living a difficult life and putting more difficult, essentially choosing to have more difficulties in our path. If we don't have that hope, then we've just made our lives that much harder for no reason. Did you have another point, Earl?
Well, I was just gonna, related to what you just said, if there's no resurrection, there's no life after death, if there's no judgment, there's no consequences, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Yeah, exactly.
Just grab all the gusto you can while you're here, because there is nothing else after this.
Exactly. All right, so the resurrection, of course, is covered in all four Gospels. I'm not going to take the time to read all four Gospels, because if I remember right, when I counted this up, I had about 52 verses of material that my class was supposed to be covering, and I could spend about a third of the class just reading it. So I'm just going to read, I'll just read Luke and John's accounts, although I will be drawing from the other ones as well. So starting in Luke 24 and beginning in verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb bringing spices which they had prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. Then they went in and did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And it happened, as they were greatly perplexed about this, that behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Then, as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remembered his words. Then they returned from the tomb and told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. And their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them. But Peter arose and ran to the tomb, and stooping down, he saw the linen cloths lying by themselves, and he departed, marveling to himself at what had happened. Then in John chapter 20, and starting in verse 1. John 20, starting in verse 1. Now the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said to them, they have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him. Peter therefore went out, and the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen cloths lying there, yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. And he saw the linen cloths lying there, and the handkerchief that had been around his head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded together in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who came to the tomb first, went in also. And he saw and believed. For as yet they did not know the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away again to their own home. But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. Then they said to her, woman, why are you weeping? She said to them, because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him. Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking? She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus said to her, Mary. She turned and said to him, Rabboni, which is to say, teacher. Jesus said to her, do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord, and that he had spoken these things to her. So I decided to take a little bit different of an approach than most of the other miracles that we have done, in that I wanted to look at this a little bit more from an evidences perspective, in looking at more of the proofs of that this actually did happen, not just about what this says about Jesus, as has kind of been more of our focus with a lot of the miracles. So as we get into this, and actually the two that I read did not include this, but I'm sure we're all fairly familiar with all the resurrection accounts. What was the first piece of the series of events about the resurrection of Jesus? This is going to be in Matthew's account, actually. And we may or may not argue that this is actually a miracle itself, aside from the resurrection. And it harkens back to the miracles of the cross, too.
Yeah.
Earthquake?
Yes. So there was a great earthquake. And what happened? I'm during that earthquake, or possibly the way it's worded, maybe even causing as a something of a cause and effect of the earthquake. Yes. Did the stone roll away by itself? No. Correct. So, who moved the stone?
Angel.
Yes. So an angel, it says, of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door. And what did he do after he rolled the stone back in the door? I find that kind of amusing in some ways. It's like, why? I don't know. But it's interesting that he chose to sit on the stone after he moved it. And so in fear of the disciples attempting to steal the body away and claiming that Jesus had risen, what had the Jewish leaders done to try and hinder that?
Had guards and sealed.
Yes. They had stationed a guard there. And one of the things that I read about it, and I didn't actually try and go confirm this for sure, was that a Roman guard typically was about 60 men. So I've always, I'm typically just pictured it as, like, there's a couple guards there or something. But it could have been 60 men standing guard. Or maybe in cycles, I'm not sure exactly how that would have been. So it's much less likely than just with one or two guards there for somebody to be able to slip past them or anything of that nature. So when the angel came down and rolled away the stone, what happened to the guards? Yeah. Essentially, they were so frightened that they fainted. All of them. And as a little bit of an aside, what happened later with the guards?
They went and reported what happened.
Yeah, they reported what happened to the chief priests, and just succinctly summarize what else, and what was the chief priests' answer or their reaction to that?
They were bribed to keep their mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that if it went any further up the chain of command, they would protect them.
Okay. And how? Why would they need to be protected? What was it that they were bribed to say?
The disciples had come and stolen the body.
Yes. That's part of it. But I think there's another key point in there that puts them at risk. Yes. They were told to say that they had fallen asleep on guard. And that's how the disciples were able to get the body away, supposedly. And of course, being a military guard, being asleep on duty is rather frowned upon. Yes, I believe from what I've read that it essentially would have been a death penalty.
For in Act 17, where the prison Paul and doomed by seven alarm.
Oh yes, and well, in that case, with the Philippian jailer, he was going to commit suicide, probably because if the guards had, or if the prisoners had escaped, he was under a death sentence anyway. So he was just going to preempt that and not suffer the humiliation of that. So the women in Luke, just before where I began reading. In Luke chapter 23, and starting verse 55, it says, "The women who had come with him from Galilee followed and saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and ointments. On the Sabbath they rested according to the commandment." So what time did the women come to the tomb? Not asking for a specific hour, but...
Early.
Yes. It was around dawn. And John says it was still dark, so it could have been early enough that it was lightning, but it was still considered to be dark, but it was around dawn, regardless. And why were they coming? Yeah, to anoint the body, to finish the burial preparations that they could not have finished earlier because of the Sabbath requirements. So who was among this group of women?
Yes, Mary Magdalene.
She's the one that's mentioned in every account. But there were actually several.
Salome.
Yeah, Salome was one. Yeah, so there's Mary, the mother of James, as well as Mary Magdalene. And then there's Joanna, and at least one other woman is what I came up with based on, especially in Luke's account. He lists several names, but Salome was not mentioned there. But he lists several names and other women, and Salome is the only one not mentioned. So there's, I guess, at least one more beyond Salome. All right. So they were the first ones to the tomb, the first ones to witness that the stone had been rolled away and that the tomb was empty. And who was it that they ran into at the tomb? They ran into somebody, or multiple somebodies, at the tomb. Yes, there were angels at the tomb, at least two of them, who testified to them that Jesus was risen and not merely moved to another location. Because if they just found the tomb empty, that would be the reasonable assumption, is that somebody moved him. So they were there to testify that he had actually risen from the dead. So the first thing that they tell the women is, do not be afraid, or do not be alarmed. Why would they be alarmed?
Seeing an angel is a dreadful sight.
Yes. After all, 60 Roman soldiers just fainted at the sight of the angel. So, as well as the fact that the body was no longer there. And they were expecting to find the body there, and they didn't know what happened. In fact, in John's account where I was reading, Mary Magdalene was weeping over the fact that they didn't know where the body was. So, there was definitely a reason for them to be frightened, to be concerned about it, to be maybe panicked to some degree. It's also, I mean, you'll also note that the angel tells them that, "I know you came to seek Jesus who was crucified." So it's interesting to me to note that it wasn't just, oh, the angel's going to ask why they were there. The angel already knew that. And they were there to, I guess, comfort them to some degree, that though they had come to prepare the body, the object of their task was gone. But just to let them know that it's all right. he is not actually among the dead any longer. So that brings up another point that I meant to actually ask earlier and forgot to write in my notes. Who actually witnessed the resurrection itself? Correct. No one actually witnessed. And there were no actual witnesses to the very event of the resurrection. We just have the witnesses after the fact who saw the evidence that he had been raised from the dead. So what was the... how did they try and comfort them over this? There was something that specifically they mentioned or tell them to remember in Luke's account. You have an introvert teaching you, I can be quiet. Starting in Luke 24, verse 6.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus had predicted this before, and he had told them that. But they had not remembered, they had not understood at the time what he was talking about. So it's not something that should have been completely unexpected. And they can take comfort in the fact that this is actually part of the plan. So... and Jesus actually, in Matthew 20 and verse 17 through 19, is where, at least one of the instances where he talks about this. And yeah, we can go ahead and flip back there. Matthew 20 and verses 17 through 19. Somebody like to read that? Yes, please.
Now Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify. And the third day, he will rise again."
So Jesus here actually had told them in a fair amount of specificity of what was going to happen to him. And made sure that he had let them know that on the third day he was going to rise again. So after that, one of the last... or before... telling them to go to tell and pass the word to his disciples, the angels tell them one more thing to do. And I find it an interesting point. They say, "Come see the place where the Lord lay." Why?
Were you in Luke on that one?
I'm trying to remember for sure. There's two different accounts that mention that.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't have quite enough room on this podium for all my papers. Yeah, so that's Matthew that I quoted, and then Mark, I think, was the other one. Yeah, see the place where they laid him in Mark. What is it? Why would they tell the women to actually see where he laid? They already told him that he was risen, or told the women that he was risen.
Wanted them to see it with their own eyes so they could confirm that the body was actually gone.
Yes. And they wanted to make sure that they didn't just take their word for it, but that they were eyewitnesses to the fact that Jesus was no longer there.
In fact, the burial cloths were still there. If someone was going to steal the body, they would just grab it up and all.
Yes. And, well, this was going to be later in there, I can mention it now. Specifically, not only were the burial, did they, if somebody had stolen the body away, not only would they have taken time to unwrap the body because the cloths were there, why would they have also taken the time to fold up the face cloth and set it aside separately from... Somebody took time when they did that. They weren't, oh no, we gotta get this done fast and get out of here before the Roman soldiers catch us or anything. It's more evidence that it was not a surreptitious type of underhanded conspiracy or anything of that nature. All right, so they were told to go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead, and that indeed he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him. And in a different account, but go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. So they were not intended to keep this to themselves. However, there's another aspect of it that I think might be significant as well. Who were they told to tell? And did they tell anybody else before they told?
Told to tell the disciples.
Mm-hmm.
But they may have told the men who were on the road to Emmaus either before or just after they told the disciples, because they encountered Jesus as well and told their story later.
But I believe that was later, after these appearances. And in Mark it says they went out quickly and fled from the tomb, for they trembled and were amazed, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. So why would it be important that the women didn't tell anybody before they told the disciples?
Someone else could have gone there.
Yes.
And been playing whatever. And it was the disciples didn't believe him to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The resurrection scene had not been contaminated by other people.
Exactly. So if they had said something to somebody on the way, there could have been a possibility for somebody else to go there and maybe find that they had overlooked the body or something and moved it or anything of that nature. That removes that possibility until the disciples were able to actually witness it themselves. Let's see here. So in that culture, the testimony of women was regarded as less than that of men. So what does it tell us about the authenticity of these accounts that every one of them mentions that it was women who saw Jesus first and who brought the word to the disciples? Doesn't that, as I said, in that culture, doesn't that mean it's less credible?
It's not something that someone would have contrived purposefully, because that would have been discredited.
Yes. If somebody were making this story up, why would they choose to have women be the first ones to witness it if they were not going to be as easily believed as men would be? So because they held to the fact that women were the first one to see it, that reinforces that these are truthful accounts, because they had no necessarily good reason to say that it was women when they could have just said it was men if they were making it up. So, did the disciples believe him when they came? Continuing that point. No, they didn't. What did Peter and John do, though? Yeah, they didn't believe him, but they went, they at least thought it was worth checking out for themselves. And they felt some sense of urgency because they ran to the tomb. So what about the women's report would have made it seem like an idle tale to them, as one of the accounts describes it? Wouldn't they have wanted to believe that?
Well, you have the big rock in front of the tomb,
mm-hmm.
and you have these women telling you, okay, Jesus is risen. Well, how is someone who was killed the way he was, who would be weakened and everything, move this big rock? That's
yeah.
a fantastic thing to think about. They couldn't move the rock.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it.
Yeah. And we, there were, was it at least five women, I think it was? And all five of them together didn't think they had any chance of moving that rock. Which, as an aside, is proof that Jesus couldn't have just swooned, as I guess the Muslims have tried to claim before, and maybe some others, and just recovered while he was in the tomb and left by himself, because if he had been injured so much that he had swooned and etc., one, how would he have swooned and still been in the tomb for 3 days rather than waking up earlier? But also, how could a man in that condition be able to move the stone, and why would he take the time to fold the cloths and all that stuff again too? Just a sign for that. So the disciples really, because they had not understood what Jesus had said before, they had no expectation that Jesus could rise from the dead. And essentially they had convinced themselves that it was impossible. And so, because they receive a report that goes contrary to what they thought was even possible, then of course it would seem fabricated to them, wouldn't it? But though we often feel like they should have believed because Jesus had said that he was going to rise from the dead, and they should have been able to understand that, how is the fact that they did not believe at first, how can that build our confidence that the resurrection actually took place? So the disciples did not believe, but we can actually be more confident about the authenticity of the accounts that the resurrection actually took place, because at first they did not believe.
They developed a belief, or resulted in a belief so strong that they put their lives, they sacrificed their lives
mm-hmm.
to teach
yeah.
that very fact.
Yeah, they later went to death professing the truth of Jesus' resurrection. But it also shows that they weren't gullible. They didn't just believe it because they wanted to believe it. They didn't think it actually could have happened, but they came, after seeing the evidence, they came to believe it so thoroughly that they would die professing that it did happen. And their lives, from this point on, completely changed. And what they did, how they approached life. The other thing that this shows us is that, unlike what the Jews tried to claim and had the guards trying to spread, and they did spread it. I think it was Matthew said that they were still spreading that tale to the day that Matthew wrote it, that the disciples had taken the body away and hidden it or stole it away and claimed that he had risen. But this, the fact that they didn't believe and they didn't think it was possible until they saw the evidence proves that it was not a plot of the disciples, and it could not have been a plot of the disciples. So, moving on, which we're definitely running short on time, not surprising. So Peter and John, after Mary brings the news to them, they ran together to the tomb, and John, kind of amusingly to me, mentions that he outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Is there anything significant about that? I don't know that there is necessarily, but I'm curious if you have any ideas of, is there any specific
John had a special relationship with Jesus.
Okay, yes, he did.
He always doesn't mention his name when he's writing concerning himself.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't mention his name.
Yes. That was kind of a style of the time that the author wouldn't mention their own name, but he referred to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved.
Yeah.
Ken, I think you had a comment then, Earl.
Could allude to the fact that maybe Peter was an older guy.
Okay. Yeah, it's a possibility that Peter was older.
What's always interesting about that was he ran ahead of Peter. He got there first, but he didn't go in. Peter mm-hmm. was the one to go in.
Yeah.
The first.
And I was going to go bring into that too, so
okay.
We might as well go there, because it's about the same section here. So why might John not have gone ahead and gone in the tomb? Why did he not go in until after Peter had gone in?
Apprehension, perhaps.
Yeah.
Peter was, he was being impulsive, impetuous.
He
may have been older, but he wasn't.
I think John was younger because when Jesus was arrested, he was there in a sheet or something in one of the records.
Okay, I want to say that was actually Mark, from what I remember, but I could be wrong about that. But yeah, I have run across something saying that John was probably younger than Peter was. I agree. I think Peter entering may have been partly just because of his impetuous type of character that he's already shown on numerous occasions. And then John may have been, it could have been some level of timidity or apprehension. It may have been out of respect for the dead, I'm not sure. Maybe he would just, because he looked in and saw the cloths there and then the body wasn't there, maybe he just stopped, paused in wonder. I'm not sure. And then Peter barged in afterward and decided to go ahead and go in. I don't know. So John saw that and he believed. Peter's reaction, I'm not certain from John's account if Peter also believed it at that point. Luke says that he marveled as he went, and then they left to go to their own homes. They still didn't quite understand how this fit in with Scripture, but they were definitely coming to believe at this point. Man, we are really running short on time, so maybe I'll skim through this here. So it's kind of hard to lay out exactly the order of events, because we have Mary at the tomb in some accounts, Mary and the other women at the tomb with some accounts, but then Mary goes to tell the disciples, but Matthew says they all went to tell the disciples. So this may or may not be completely accurate, and I'm not sure that it really matters too much specifically. But so I think maybe Mary ran ahead of the other women to tell the disciples. The other women were following behind. Peter and John went back to the tomb, and Mary with them. And then maybe by the time they all got back, then the other women made it. I'm not sure. It's, as I said, it's a little confusing to actually get a grasp of what order things happen. So after Peter and John left, Mary is outside the tomb. So apparently she came back with them. And she looks into the tomb after they've gone. And what did she see that they didn't at this point? What's changed?
She saw the angels.
Yes, the angels were in there after Peter and John left. And they ask her, why are you weeping? She tells them that it's because the body is gone. She thought somebody had stolen the body, and she didn't know where it was. I find it in some ways kind of interesting that she has two angels there in front of her. She says this, and then she turns away from them. And as awe-inspiring as it would be to see angels in person, she just turns away from them. It's kind of curious. But she turns away and sees a man standing there nearby. And thinking that it was just the gardener, she didn't recognize that it was Jesus. Jesus then asks her the same question that the angels asked her in John's account, but adding, whom are you seeking? And she, since she thought he was the gardener, asks him if he had taken the body away and where he put the body so that she can attend to it and take care of the body. And then Jesus answers not her question, but just states her name, calls her by name. And at that point, she recognizes who Jesus actually is. Not just the gardener, but it's actually Jesus. And I am out of time. So, let's see here. What else do I have that I really wanted to touch on? So what had Jesus not done yet before?
Ascended to the Father.
Yeah. He was still needed to ascend to the Father. And he specifically tells her to tell the disciples, not just to his Father, but it's to his Father and their Father. So.
His God and their God.
Yep, and his God and their God. All right. Since I'm supposed to be covering resurrection appearances, the other situation here is, as the women are going to the disciples, Jesus also appears to them and tells them to rejoice. And they fell at his feet, held his feet, and worshipped him. And then he gives them the same message that the angels did to tell the disciples to meet him in Galilee. All right. Very quick overview of the resurrection appearances of the tomb. Thank you for all the comments and attention. And hopefully it was beneficial.